Well, terrorism is a constantly evolving phenomenon. Our terrorist adversaries are extremely adaptable. They are even sometimes extremely innovative, and they can change very, very, very quickly. They are extremely flexible in their strategy and their tactics, and we think that they probably learn from each other, learn from us. For example, you see changes such as the adoption of suicide bombing techniques, which began in about 1983. You didn't see the phenomenon before then. All of a sudden, it caught on, and it's become the hallmark of Al Qaeda. We notice a number of changes in their tactics over time. And what we argue in our book is that when you over-respond to terrorism and you put in place policies and institutions and rules and regulations by a big government like the United States, it's very difficult to change when the adversary changes. You just cannot shift so quickly. And therefore, you want to try to remember that you want to be able to retain some flexibility as they begin to shift and change tactics and adapt to you. And just remember that these are smaller, more fluid organizations, looser organizations, not enormous government bureaucracies, and to be prepared for them to change.
How do you grade the U.S.'s attempt to do that?
Well, I don't think that we have always been flexible. I think that's probably true across the board with most of the problems that we confront, that you have to recognize the problem, you have to get a solution through the political process, you have to implement it, and by the time you've done that, the problem may have changed enormously, because particularly in the case of terrorism, we're dealing actually with a very small number of people. And as I say, very fluid, amorphous sorts of organizations who range from individuals who are inspired by the appeal that comes over the internet to formal organizations with leaders whom we are striking with drone strikes in order to try to degrade their organizations. In between are social networks, people who went to school together, people who are related by family. So it's extremely difficult even to pin down who the adversary is, where the attack will be coming from. Will it be in France? Will it be in Belgium? Will it be in Germany? Will it be in the US? Will it be in Britain? They have the ability to just move very, very quickly, and also they have the ability to have networks in place ready to strike when they think that the timing is right. And of course, it's trying to keep those networks out of the United States that we are trying to do that. And as far as I can see, we don't have those kinds of embedded networks here in the United States. The situation really is quite different in Europe.
And you say as well, the U.S. needs to accept limits to its ability to totally manage and control the jihadist threat. And you sort of talked about that a minute ago, but don't you have to give it the college try, no pun intended. But how do you do that?
Well, we depend on our allies. For example, we depend on foreign countries to provide us intelligence about plots that might be developing. For example, a few years ago, there was a plot that was hatched in Yemen to send computer printers to targets in the United States. Never mind why anybody wouldn't think it was sort of suspicious to send printers from Yemen to the U.S. when we are the ones who have printers. But at any rate, the Saudi Arabia detected the plot and told U.S. authorities. The so-called liquid explosives plot in 2006, it was a British who intercepted that plot and told us. So we depend on other countries to be watching all the time and to use their intelligence to inform us about what's going on. We depend on them to arrest jihadist terrorists and put them in jail and keep them in jail. We depend on them to help us militarily. We're trying to help Iraq, for example, defeat the Islamic State. We're reaching out to allies in Syria. And also, if we look at the conditions that might be conducive to creating support for terrorism, you look, for example, at problems in Nigeria and the rise of Boko Haram, you'd say, well, the government of Nigeria really needs to do a whole lot better in terms of human rights, in terms of economic development, in terms of equality, in terms of treatment of religious minorities. But the United States government can't force the Nigerian government to make these reforms or to build state capacity.
Martha Crenshaw, terrorism expert at Stanford University and author of the book Countering Terrorism. J.J. Green, WTOP News.